So, our mission has been working in the Nuba Mountains of Sudan for many years, back since the mid-90s, seeking to help these people in Island of Christianity and the Sea of Islam, taking them food because their farms have been burned down, their crops have been destroyed, they're living up in the mountains. And earlier this year, four of our missionaries, Ben, Aubrey, John and Hunter, went and saw these bombed out areas, bombed out churches, bombed out schools, saw some of the wells that missionaries have established for the people recently there, and the importance of also having a concrete lip so that you could have the animals have some clean water, not just drinking in the mud as well, but an opportunity for them to get the overflow that inevitably is there. Well, if you go during the rainy season, vehicles get stuck. Sometimes you're just carrying the box of Bibles. But we had the privilege and joy of our team delivering the largest shipment of Bibles ever smuggled into an officially Islamic country, along with Christian books on the life of Jesus Christ, full-color cartoon books made available for the schools. So they provide these. They delivered 32,000 of these full Bibles, actually, to 130 schools, and also for the junior schools they were delivering, particularly the Story of Jesus books. And this is an opportunity to provide textbooks for the schools. In many cases, they have none. So that's just a bit of background. I know I've got people who, the moment you speak about the land situation, they say, "You're a racist, you're just doing this because you don't care about black people." Well, our mission for 37 years, our first priority, has been helping the Christians throughout Africa, most of them black Christians, who have been persecuted for their faith. So just mention that as a background. And we deal with these issues, including from invasions and all of that, from the front line, our radio podcast that we broadcast from our website, with a clear aim to take down communism. We've also this year launched a new project called the Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism, where we're trying to give Christian perspective on the news, because there are five culture-carrying, culture-transforming institutions. Education is the most important. That's the thumb. Entertainment industry, very important. News media, that's what we're talking about here. And religious institutions, political institutions. News media is one of the most important, one of the five important culture-carrying, culture-transforming institutions which communists aim to subvert, and in many cases they've already hijacked, and which we as Christians should seek to redeem and to use for evangelism to fulfill the Great Commission. Professor Martin Luther, the great German reformer, declared, "If I profess with the loudest voice and the clearest exposition every portion of the truth of God, except precisely that point which the world and devil are at that moment attacking, then I'm not confessing Christ, however boldly I may be professing him. Where the battle rages, there the loyalty of the soldier is proved. And to be steady on all the battlefront besides is mere flight and disgrace if he flinches at that point." You know, as a soldier, you can't always choose your point of duty, nor can you always choose your battle. Your time of battle, place of battle, or who you're going to fight. As a soldier, you've got to be willing to prove your loyalty where the battle rages. Now, as soldiers of Christ, as disciples of Christ, as followers of Christ, we prove our loyalty to Christ by fighting where the battle rages. Now, praise God for Martin Luther, who fought for justification by faith. Salvation is by the grace of God alone, received by faith alone. Christ alone is the head of the church. Scripture alone is our authority. Everything should be done to the glory of God alone. He fought against indulgences. He fought against buying and selling salvation. He fought against the papacy. He fought against the falsehood that claimed that a priest could forgive someone's sins. God alone can forgive your sins, he taught. Martin Luther fought many good and important battles. But it's no good for me to be saying I'm fighting for these battles that have already been won. While meanwhile, down the road, they're brainwashing children in blasphemous, secular humanism, anti-God evolutionism, and I'm doing nothing about education. Or down the other road, they're killing babies for abortion. And if I'm not speaking up against that. And then they're trying to steal this farmer's farm and put his workers out of work, effectively, as a result of a whole lot of people are going to starve. If the battle is raging on marriage, is marriage between one man, one woman for life? Or is it maybe polygamy, perversion, or something else. Where the battle rages, there the loyalty of the soldier is proved. And so that's why this morning we're dealing with South African history and media workshop. We're wanting to look at how we can respond to this crisis. So, particularly right now, the big issue is farms and freedom under fire in South Africa. The National Assembly of the South African Parliament sent shockwaves around the country by setting in motion at the end of February a process to change the Constitution and the Bill of Rights so as to allow expropriation of land without compensation. EWC, expropriation without compensation. When you listen to a whole lot of the news reports, they can't even say it right. I mean, you've got cabinet ministers speaking about a compensation without expropriation. Well, I have no problem with compensation without expropriation, but they can't even get the order right. I mean, they can't even pronounce it right in many cases. The ANC has been aiming for this for quite some time. Do you know, back in 2012, in fact, we'll get to that later, 2012, they already were accepting as a policy document moving into the second phase of the revolution. But more about that in a later presentation. The threat to private ownership of property and the clearly stated intention to remove constitutional safeguards, effectively change the law, and to remove those protections for private ownership of property has staggered observers. The motion was adopted by a vote of 241 in support of this outrageous, lawless action, with only 83 voting against. This is the way it actually came down. The African National Congress, notice the middle letters of cancer is ANC, the Economic Freedom Party, the EFF, also known as the Everything for Free Party, they voted for the motion. And then the DA and the Freedom Front and the Congress of the People, COPE, and the African Christian Democratic Party, those four opposition parties voted against this motion. The EFF's supporter profile is interesting. You can see here where they stand. Most EFF are single, 74%, overwhelming amount single. Most of them are very young. Actually, you can see the vast majority of them are under the age of 34, almost all. And you can see also when you get not only the ages, but if you look at the education, there's the ages on this side. So the vast majority are under 35, in fact, most are under 24. So you can also see there's a huge amount of them who have very low education, and where most of them live, well, most of them are up in Limpopo and Eastern Cape, as understood in Gauteng. One time, ANC leader Masoi Lekota, once called Terry Lekota, now leader of COPE, condemned the EFF tactics as imbecilic racist attacks. Now, the reason why I'm quoting from Lekota is not because I support him or COPE. They're just ex-ANC. But I'm quoting them because, you know, it's no good me telling you what General Viljoen or the head of AfriForum has to say about this. Let's take what a person who used to be a leader in the ANC says. He calls them imbecilic racist attacks. And this vote for expropriation without compensation, misleading our people for cheap popularity just to win votes. In other words, they know it won't work, but they're promising something that can't possibly do any good, just to get a vote. The notion of a stolen land, now I'm still quoting from Lekota, head of COPE, is a false narrative. In other words, the land hasn't been stolen. We call on the ANC to pronounce themselves unambiguously as to whether they have now changed historical policy and abandoned the Freedom Charter in favour of the racist rhetoric of the EFF and the Pan-African Congress, PAC. You see, the Freedom Charter is non-racialism and so on, but now what Cyril Ramaphosa's president said, we're going to take land away from the whites and give it to our people. Are white South Africans no longer South Africans? It's like last year when we had the fires that burned down so much of the forest around Nyasa and so many of the homes as well, which was arson. It's been proven since by the investigation by the fire brigade. Over 50 of the 50 fires started simultaneously by arson. And at the time, Zuma was asked, what's he going to do to help them? He says, nothing. They're not our people. The president could say that about a whole group of people who've just had their homes and farms and forests around them burned down by arson. They're not our people. Interesting. Here's an actual fact. I heard last night a cabinet minister saying that blacks only have 4% of the land in South Africa. Okay. This is what the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform says. This is the government. Whites own 26 million hectares of South Africa. But South Africa is 122 million hectares, which means, officially, white farmers or other people who are white own 22% of the land in South Africa. 22%. That's not the 70-something percent, the 90-something percent, as these different people put out. That's, and most of it, notice where most of it is? NC. NC stands for Northern Cape. Northern Cape's got over 11 million hectares. Northern Cape is Karoo and Kalahari. It is like desert. It's wilderness. It's some of the most arid, inhospitable, non-farming territory imaginable. So the best farmland in this country is actually KwaZulu, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Eastern Cape. But the white farmers have a minority of the farms there. As you can see, that's not where they've got most of the land. So this is a real distortion. About half of the land that the white farmers has is actually in the Kalahari and the Karoo, Northern Cape. So this immediately shows the statistics they're using are false. This is a pretty good cartoon. Yes, this shows the fat cat with the ANC colour tie sitting on the poor voters, pulling the land reform burden, offering them a shriveled up dead carrot as an incentive. That's basically it. You're talking about a bunch of fat cats on a gravy train who are burdening the taxpayers with unbearable amounts of taxation and so on, and they are promising them something which they've actually got to pull. They've got to suffer the burden of it. EFF leader Julius Malema declared that he wants to hit white men hard. We are cutting the throat of whiteness. He said this year immediately after this successful vote for him of expropriation without compensation. By the way, do you notice that? Do you see the colour there? What's this behind? It's a police vehicle. This man is happily standing next to a police vehicle with an incitement to commit murder, which many people would call at least hate crime, at the very least. DA leader, who I don't support, do not respect, would never vote for. I'd rather chew glass and be bombed by the Arabs in the Nub Mountains and while I crawl across a minefield, then vote for this man. But I'm quoting him simply because, again, he's not one of the most conservative figures out there. But DA leader, by the way, he's in alliance with the EFF, or has been in alliance with the EFF, for example, in Port Elizabeth and other places. He condemned the EFF for its destructive racist policies, saying it is madness, it is insane. Well, even a stopped clock is right twice a day. And on this, he's dead right. It is madness, it is insane. Considering the catastrophic consequence of communist land reform in neighbouring Zimbabwe, which is our near neighbour, just north of Limpopo, not that far away, it would seem inexplicable that the ANC government of South Africa would want to follow in the footsteps of failure by committing economic suicide. London barrister Malcolm Horn commented on the planned land grab in South Africa. You cannot have land expropriation without compensation. It is illegal under international law. It is contrary to a dozen treaties that South Africa signed and ratified. Confiscation with compensation is already a problem. But confiscation without compensation is theft. There's no other word for it. It's illegal. Still quoting from this barrister, as such, it is a principle that is also enshrined in South African domestic law. You cannot change the constitution, therefore, to make it legal. Treaty law is superior law. It always applies. If we have an uncorrupt and sane constitutional court, they will have to throw it out as unconstitutional. If they're not on drugs at the time, if they're not under intimidation, they would have to. But perhaps these characters up in the ANC and EFF know something we don't know. Maybe they bought the constitutional court. I don't know what's going to happen. But no higher court, constitutional court or Supreme Court could possibly ratify a breach of the constitution like this. This is what this London barrister is saying. Isaiah 8 and verse 20. Good verse to know off by heart. to the law and to the testimony. If they do not speak according to this word, it is because there is no light in them. If they do not speak in accordance with the law of God, there is no light in them. In fact, that reminds me of Magna Carta and the principle that has been enshrined in British law, that if a law is not in accordance with God's law, it is invalid law. It's no law at all. And that's, in fact, a principle you get from Magna Carta of 1215, the grandfather of all Bill of Rights, which is thoroughly saturated with scripture and founded on biblical law. When Patrice Lumumba violated the constitution and the laws of the Congo with nationalizations, which is just a nice word for when the government steals things, the result was carnage, civil war, and a total economic collapse of the Congo. One of our people who's here today, Alpha, who's in the children's program, you can speak to her during tea or lunch, she's from the Congo. She can tell you. Nationalization of industries and farms in Zambia and Tanzania brought economic collapse to those countries as well. However, vast amounts of Western foreign aid kept these countries somewhat afloat, although the vast majority of aid was stolen by the corruption from the governments themselves. When Mozambique was granted independence by Portugal in 1975, Samora Machel of Frelimo confiscated all private property and completely destroyed what was once a vibrant economy. This was the Grand Hotel in Beira. Not so grand anymore. Before independence, Mozambique exported food. After Frelimo's revolution, more than 1 million Mozambicans died of starvation in a green country that used to export food. And the country is torn apart by a vicious civil war. And this is the end result of land reform from one side of the world to the other. At independence in Zimbabwe in 1980, Mozambique's Samora Machel and Tanzania's Julius Nyerere actually warned Robert Mugabe not to make the same mistakes they had done. This is actually quite extraordinary that they'd actually learned something from their own mistakes. Machel and Nyerere actually urged Mugabe to respect property rights and let the Europeans continue to contribute to the economy. Don't kill the goose that lays the golden egg, they said. When Mugabe began to threaten white farmers, most media comment was, there should be no concern because Mugabe is an intelligent person, educated person, he's got degrees. He knew that dispossession of farms would be a catastrophe for the country. Why would you do that? They remain employers, they remain contributors to the economy, they feed the whole country, they provide most of the exports, they provide most of the foreign aid. I mean, of course he's not going to touch them. But don't underestimate the blindness of people's hatred and greed and covetousness and the serious damage that communism does to a person's psyche. I mean, they actually become demon-possessed. And yes, they did destroy. And land reform in Zimbabwe was nothing to do with land reform. It was everything to do with looting and destroying. And it wasn't a matter of taking a productive farm run by a white commercial farmer and it being taken over by a productive farm run by a black commercial farmer. No, it's just destruction and looting. Myths and realities. Yet Mugabe's ZANU-PF government did seize over 5,000 commercial farms and evicted the white farmers from their homes. In many cases, there were third or fourth generation citizens who had literally carved their farms out of the wilderness. They hadn't stolen a farm from anyone. They'd come to a total wilderness of thorn bushes, and through hard work and irrigation and year in, year out, sacrifice, literally with their blood in the soil and their family members buried in that soil, in that farm. They carved out productive farms out of the wilderness. They didn't steal anyone's farm. Even as Zimbabwe's economy collapsed and more than a half of the total population of Zimbabwe fled the country, voting with their feet, a vote of no confidence in Mugabe's Marxist Zimbabwe, most African leaders were applauding and cheering Mugabe even while he was destroying his country with an economic suicide. The land reform deception is the right title. Political opportunism in Zimbabwe's land seizure era. Well said. It's nothing but political opportunism, and it's a deception. The people were promised exactly what Ramaphosa and Lema is promising South Africa. It won't affect the economy. It won't affect the Western continents. It won't affect our ability, our food security. Oh, come on. show us one case where land reform has not affected food security, has not resulted in starvation, has not resulted in the flight of investor confidence and destruction of the economy. There's no model. I mean, just ask them in their terms, can you show a model where this has worked? No, they cannot. But it's going to work here. South African ANC President Thabo Mbeki unquestionably backed Mugabe's disastrous policies in Zimbabwe and helped keep the country from complete bankruptcy through regular aid and electricity from South Africa. When the Zimbabwe police were electrocuting people in Chikurubi prison, they were using it for the electricity provided by Eskom. Land reform, deception and opportunism indeed. And yes, whether you're talking about Ethiopia, whether you're talking about Zimbabwe, it's the same thing. From one side of the country, continent to the other, whenever they've done this, whether you're talking about Mengistu's famine that he did through his land reform in Ethiopia, whether you're talking about Biafra in Nigeria, always the poorest of the poor suffer the most. And then along comes the UN, the World Food Programme. And they bring hundreds of millions of tons of food into a country that used to export food and feed itself. And don't think most of it gets to the people. Most of it does not get to the people. And the kids just grow up and die amongst litter and pollution and chaos in refugee camps because the beautiful villages amongst the farms have now been abandoned and they're in effective concentration camps. They call them refugee camps. The fall of Jacob Zuma and the rise to power of Cyril Ramaphosa in South Africa earlier this year was accompanied with a wave of euphoria and many Christians declaring, "We are saved! A new day is dawning! Now we can begin to rebuild the country. Our prayers have been answered." Friends of mine who should have known better were posting ill-informed comments like that. Have they learned nothing? Yet in his opening State of the Nation address to Parliament, Cyril Ramaphosa announced, "We will seize land without compensation." This was greeted with the loudest and most sustained applause of his address. And it's bad enough when people make stupid comments. It's terrible, and it's even worse when a lot of people applaud it. It's like someone pronouncing heresy in church and there's lots of amens, which I'm afraid happens quite often. Considering that South Africa provides sanctuary for much more than 10 million refugees who fled endemic misrule to the north, they fled these policies to the north. They've tried to find sanctuary in South Africa where at least we can feed our people at the moment. Imploding food security in South Africa will affect far more than our own population. It's not just us who are going to be affected. Did you know that the South African ANC government is sitting on over 4,323 farms that were handed over by the previous white owners on a willing buyer, willing seller basis that has never been transferred to black owners? Why don't they start with the farms in their hands? You know the government has got vastly more property in their hand than all the farmers. Why interfere with a productive farm that's working, that's paying taxes, that's feeding the people, that's providing employment, that's stable? Why interfere with something that's working? If it isn't broken, don't fix it. Why not fix the government farms that they've got at their disposal? If you wanted to try some experiments with people who've got no agricultural training or background, well, start with the land that's vacant and that's in their hands now. Why not? The government doesn't. Do you know that just last year, the government took 10 billion, that's billion with a B, rand of our taxpayers' money and gave it to bail out South African Airways, which, by the way, is not giving away tickets for free. It's one of the most expensive and badly run airlines. And every year we pay something in the region of 10 billion or so. This year they want us to pay another 5 billion already just for the first half of this year to bail out SAA. If they would that's more money than they've allocated for all of the land reform in the country. And by the way, they allocate more than 15 billion to VIP security for themselves, for the cabinet ministers and so on and parliament. That's more than they're allocating to land reform or even South African Airways. Bailouts. If they would put this sort of money towards land reform, they could establish how many farmers in these farms that they've already got, many of which are huge, colossal. If they would use what they've got, they would, because whenever you bring this up, say, "Oh, something's got to be done." Well, yes, like how about getting rid of the ANC for starters, because the last 24 years of their worthless existence, they've added a million unemployed people to the ranks that are employed with every other being in power. When Mandela became president, unemployment in South Africa was just over 2 million. Today it's closer to 30 million. We've added more than 24 million unemployed in the last 24 years of the worthless misrule of this corrupt bunch of communist criminals. If they would do something like their own job, instead of attacking the farmers who are one of the few productive parts of this country that's actually helping us all. But, well, don't expect much from these characters. They're asleep at the wheel or in their seats or whatever it is, or on their cell phones, or actually the Minister of Finance during the debate for Minister, people took a picture, showed him he's playing video games on his tablet while they were debating the economic things. That's our Minister of Finance. In 1994, when Nelson Mandela became president of South Africa, we had 70,000 white commercial farmers who were feeding over 100 million people throughout Africa. That's a phenomenal achievement. 70,000 farmers feeding 100 million people throughout Africa. At that point, we had 28 million population. Today, we have barely 28,000 commercial farmers who are able to feed 40 million people. But our population has already more than doubled to over 58 million since 1994. Our population has more than doubled, and our number of commercial farmers is down to almost a third. Can you see the problem? Even as the population of this country has doubled since 1994, our food production is less than 40% of what it was in 1994. That is catastrophic. We're having to import food to stay alive. And what happens to people across the border who can't get fed by the food that used to be grown in the Orange Free State and so on? Well, they're coming here. They've added to our population. This is 2017. Mid-2017, we're at 56 million. Now we're over 58 million. Our population is increasing by something like a million immigrants a year. The food crisis in Africa is about to get much, much worse. South Africa is one of the few agriculturally capable countries in Africa. You destroy this, it's going to get much worse. And the refugee crisis is going to get a lot worse. People have been fleeing these kind of policies from Tanzania, Angola, Mozambique, Congo, Zambia, Zimbabwe for years. And they've been coming to South Africa. Where are we going to go? The ANC government has been a complete failure on every level. In 1994, the rand was closer to 2 rand to the dollar. Today, it's around 14 rand to the dollar. And remember, that was after years of war, sanctions, conscription, riots, and all sorts of things. Now, with foreign aid, and no war, and no conscription, we are 14 rand to the dollar. This is catastrophic. I remember when 5 rand note could fill your petrol tank. Well, George could remember when it could do a lot more than that. But my first mission. I went from Cape Town to Johannesburg on 34 rand, filled the tank. 34 rand got me to Johannesburg from Cape Town, 1,400 kilometers. 34 rand was enough to pay for the fuel. I went to Zimbabwe, and I was horrified. I came back in 1982 and said, in Zimbabwe, the dollar counter spins around faster than the liter one that crawls around. And everyone was, oh, that's incredible. Never happened here. I mean, over here, the litre would spin while the rand and cents would crawl over. But of course, we've long passed that point. Now, 100 rand will barely move the needle out of empty. The rand has gone down, big time. But just in case you were wondering how bad it could get, in Zimbabwe, they reached a $100 trillion note and just couldn't buy a quarter of a loaf of bread. 2008. You couldn't buy a quarter of a loaf of bread with a $100 trillion note. To try and work out something on your calculator would be a problem. You don't have that much space. And this is after they'd knocked 16 zeros off it. In 2005, before they reached the stage, one brick cost more than all the homes, businesses, farms, and industries in all of Zimbabwe combined in 1980. What does this mean? Some people get very rich, but most people lose everything. Pensions, savings, everything. Pensioners, their pension was worth nothing. This wheelbarrow full of money couldn't buy a loaf of bread. Unemployment in 1994 was under 3 million. Today, unemployment in South Africa is closer to 30 million. It's 1,000% worse. For every year the ANC's been in power, they've added another million unemployed people to the ranks of unemployed. How do they do this? Oh, how do you like the way they play with their statistics? So you've got employed, that's the blue, 43%. Unemployed, that's the red. Then you've got discouraged work seekers, that's the same thing as unemployed. Then you've got other economically inactive, that's also unemployed. So add these together, and actually we've got more than half unemployed. This is just, have you ever heard of it, discouraged work seekers? You know, you used to have employed and unemployed. Now you've got economically inactive, discouraged work seekers. They can't even say yes is yes or no is no. They are pathological liars as well as compulsive thieves. Then you get to where people were working in 1994. And notice how agriculture used to be 3.43% of the pie of employment. Now it's down to 2.67. We've got less people involved in agriculture, forestry and fishing. Less than was before. Why? Well, they've destroyed so many of the forests. They've destroyed so many of the farms. And yes, so no wonder. And you could continue. Power failures. We used to call them blackouts, another called load shedding. Water restrictions. Rampant crime, rape and murder become everyday realities for the long-suffering people of South Africa. To distract citizens from the disastrous failure and catastrophic corruption of the ANC government, lies, distortions, disinformation, fabrications, misleading statistics, and campaigns of guilt manipulation have been manufactured to create a smokescreen to cover the rampant corruption and incompetence of the ANC. Make no mistake. All that they bring up is one big smokescreen. But you know, if somebody wants to steal from you, they normally work in a team. One person distracts you, or maybe a couple of people distract you, while the other one takes your handbag, reaches into the car. You know, oh, at a petrol station, did this with my father-in-law, Bill Batman. Oh, wants to show him something under the bonnet of the car. And while the people looking under the bonnet of the car, someone else from their team stole a handbag with all of their passports, prescription glasses, and medicines and everything else, and money and the whole lot. Stole the whole handbag, caused immense trouble in the middle of a mission. He came round to look under it while the people distracted him for their other buddies to steal out the car, while Auntie Harriet was in the ladies at the petrol station. This is how it works. This is the way it always works. You've got the distractors and you've got the thieves. They're working together. Most of what the government does is a distraction to enable them to loot the country. The British economist coined the term ineptocracy, specifically to cover what's going on in the ANC. A system of government where the least capable to lead are elected by the least capable of producing, and where the members of society least likely to sustain themselves or succeed are rewarded with goods and services paid for by the confiscated wealth of a diminishing number of producers. South Africa is one of the few countries in the world where most of the taxpayers never voted for the government. There's our tax base right now. We have income taxpayers of about 1.9 million, and they've got 20 million on welfare, just for starters. Those people who work for a living are outnumbered by those who vote for a living. And remember, the ANC is nothing but a front for the Southern Communist Party. The Southern Communist Party controls the African National Congress, and that's been proven for a long time. All of their leaders have been senior members of the Politburo of the Southern Communist Party. This is true for Mandela, Mbeki, Zuma, and Cyril Ramaphosa. In fact, the Southern Communist Party has never put up a candidate under their own name in election. They always put them up through the ANC. You can go onto the Southern Communist Party website, and you will see not only that you can buy Lenin baseball caps and Lenin T-shirts and Lenin ballpoint pens and credit cards accepted. This is on what's meant to be a communist website. But they tell you, the Southern Communist Party is not putting up a candidate in the next election, but advises all cadres to vote for the ANC candidate. How can they say that? Unless they control the ANC. Go on to the Communist Party USA, and they'll say, aside from you can buy Lenin baseball caps and Lenin T-shirts and mugs and so on, with credit cards accepted and Visa and MasterCard, you can also see there, this Communist Party USA is not putting up a candidate in the next election, but advises all cadres to vote for the Democratic Party candidate. Why would they need to put up a candidate when they've got people like Clinton and Obama and Hillary? you know, vote for the candidate that we've already controlled. The communists have found it's easier to put up their candidates under another cover. The Southern Communist Party is like a ventriloquist dummy. but the hand controlled them inside the Southern Communist Party. Remember, the ANC is not a nationalist party. They're actually a group of nationalists controlled by the communists, who are small, but they're in the key places. To enable the looting of this country, whites have been demonized and made scapegoats for every problem for the country. Even after 24 years of ANC rule, nothing is accepted as their fault. Do you know, in Zambia, Frederick Chiluba, who was locked up in Lusaka Central Prison, the same prison I was once locked up in, Frederick Chiluba said, when he became president, he said, enough already. The British left 27 years ago. If there's something wrong in Zambia, it's our fault. That's an honest man. And when the people want them to increase their salaries and so on in civil service, said, listen, people have been taxed too much already. I can increase your salaries. But if I do that, I'm going to tax people more, and you're already overtaxed. And we're going to undermine our economy by printing more currency than there's value to back it. And the value of everything's going to go up. The price is going to go up. The value of your money is going to go down. You're all going to be poorer. So it's better for me to say no to you. Now, that's an honest leader who had the courage to tell the people what they didn't want to hear, but which was economic reality and truth. But no, in South Africa, you can get whites are to blame. For what? For everything. Instead, irresponsible politicians have engaged in the most reckless rabble-rousing and hate-mongering, which threatened to subvert the very fabric of our society. At his presidential inauguration in 1994, Nelson Mandela declared, never, never, never again will any South African be discriminated against on the basis of their race. Do you remember the amount of people cheering when he made that statement at union buildings in 1994 when he became president? Well, if only that was true. This was immediately followed by affirmative action, black economic empowerment, BBBEE, and racial quotas, which only succeeded in chasing away investors, employers, entrepreneurs, and tourists, and increasing unemployment. When they speak about broad-based empowerment, this is what you're talking about. There used to be a beer belly, now there's the BEE belly. Case in point, my own family. I've got two daughters, apparently born under apartheid, they say, 1991, 1993. No race mentioned on the birth certificate. My sons, born free, according to ANC propaganda, born 1995 and 1999, under Mandela. Their race is in their birth certificate. Why? Mandela didn't end apartheid, he brought it back. P.W. Botha ended apartheid. Mandela brought it back in the form of BBBEE and affirmative action. Literally, this is the kind of nonsense you get. You're not allowed to give donations to white charities, even though there's 800,000 in squatter camps. This is apparently not hate speech. Kill a Boer, kill a farmer. This government is hell-bent on destroying this country. Instead of redressing their failed policies, the ANC have continued to throw good money after bad, after all, not their money. They're hell-bent on promoting immoral, unwise, and counterproductive policies on every level. On every level. If you want to keep the family together, you do not legalize pornography. Men make up the majority of the tax-paying, rate-paying, bond-paying, they're the cohesive force. You don't want to encourage men to leave their family responsibilities and go after pornography and homosexuality and all that stuff. This is insane. Destroying the families is the biggest guarantee to destroying the whole country. It's a basic building block of society. Now, heedless to the warning of the catastrophic decolonization land reform policy of Joseph Stalin in the Ukraine, the Soviet Union in the 1930s, and Animal Farm, which was produced by George Orwell, an ex-communist who saw what was done in the Ukraine and Russia in the 1930s and as a result became anti-communist and warned about it. Joseph Stalin continued the policy begun by Lenin of decolonization or land reform, which included burning whole forests, confiscating the food that the people had accumulated to try and survive, people dying of starvation in the streets of Kiev, what used to be the breadbasket of Europe, Ukraine. The people died by the millions. Hunger, despair, and death in Ukraine, agony. People starving in what used to be great farming areas. Just in 1 year, 6 million perished in the Soviet famine of their deculicization of their land reform. There's a drama that was produced last year called Bitter Harvest, which documents in a dramatic form the reality of what happened in Ukraine. Very unusual to get a friendly to Christianity, honest expose of communist atrocities in the Ukraine. But this would be a good antidote to people who think land reform is a good idea. Then you take the Holocaust in Rwanda of 1994, where they whipped up the whole population, the majority of the Hutus, to hate and despise the Tutsi minority. And the Chinese provided 1 million machetes, pangas. They slaughtered the people mostly in churches. I walk knee-deep in corpses in Natarama Church. And they wiped out 800,000 people with machetes in 6 weeks. But interestingly, it didn't end there. The victims became the victors. Today, David is ruling over Goliath. The minority Tutsi are running Rwanda. These are the Rwandese Patriotic Front. They were refugees living across the border in Rwanda and Uganda. They'd fled away from the atrocities in Rwandan massacres before, the smaller scale massacres, the training ones. And now they came over and they knew there were few and what chance they'd have of winning against this massive army of the Hutu majority who were supported by the French and by the Libyans and by Congo under Mobutu Seseku, Zaire at that stage. And they came in, but they beat them because, you know, bullies are cowards. When they face resistance, they flee. So it was bullets, not ballots, that changed, just as the parliament in Kigali. I documented the Holocaust in Rwanda. And interestingly, because I've heard, for example, I've been at ANC meetings, and I was at an ANC meeting in Calvin Grove, which is a snobs club in Cape Town. And they were giving me push. And at one point, this ANC man, this is years ago, he said, when Mandela dies, we're going to kill all your whites like flies. Now, why he even said it, considering the audience was mostly white, I have no idea. Probably to intimidate us. But I said, like Rwanda against the Tutsi. He said, exactly. And I said, have you seen how that turned out? He was a bit confused. And I said, the Hutu aren't running the country anymore. The Tutsi minority, the under 12% population, they used to be 15%. The 12%, they're running the country of Rwanda now for the last, well, now it's 24 years. Near silence. So I continued and I said, the Tutsi had no great military heritage or training. And yet they beat the majority tribe when they started the genocide. They were emboldened by their Christian faith and by a sense of right and also just desperation to save their families from genocide. I said, do you know, there's about 600,000 white South Africans who serve in the South African Defence Force on the border. They fought their own war. We've got real veterans who actually fought and won a war against Cubans and Russians in Angola. I know many of them are overseas, but they'd come back in a heartbeat if their loved ones' lives were in danger. I said, try it. See how fast it boomerangs against you and how quickly you would lose all credibility. Nobody would listen to you anymore. Just like the Hutus, they've lost all right to rule and all credibility. It doesn't matter that the majority being ruled by the minority in Rwanda anymore, because the genocide has so disgraced them in the eyes of the international community that nobody minds that it's now the Tutsi minority ruling in Rwanda. I said, you want a rematch? Try it. See what happens. Nevertheless, a lot of innocent people die. If the ANC and the EFF go ahead with their talk about genocide here against the whites and against the farmers, there will be a lot of scars. A lot of people will suffer. But at the end, they will lose. They always lose. This film I don't recommend, Hotel Rwanda, is a piece of Hollywood rubbish made in South Africa with South Africans and Americans playing Rwandese, and they totally ignored the Christian dimension. Even though it's based on a true story, there's no prayer, there's no hymn singing, there's no reason. They don't explain the anti-Christian persecution that this genocide was. So I reject this film. Shooting Dogs, despite the disgusting title, is a more honest film. It's also called Beyond the Gates. And Shake Hands with the Devil. These were filmed in Rwanda with Rwandese actors playing in the actual place where it happened. This Romeo Dallaire was the Canadian general in charge of UN peacekeeping force in Rwanda that disarmed the people and stood by and did nothing when they were slaughtered. And here he blows the whistle on how the UN, and there's a film on it too, this is much more honest, along with Beyond the Gates or Shooting Dogs, the British production, this Canadian production, Shake Hands with the Devil. I recommend these as being far more honest exposés of what actually happened in Rwanda. And considering the catastrophic land reform policies in Zimbabwe, the ANC now wants to remove constitutional protections on private ownership of property. This is what land reform looked like in Zimbabwe. This is what it looked like after land reform. In fact, let's give you a couple of examples of land reform in Zimbabwe. This man, after having a bottle smashed in front of him in front of police in downtown Harare, said to the police, "Aren't you meant to protect the citizens of Zimbabwe?" And they said, "No, our job is to enforce the policy of the government." And so, too male, too pale, beaten just because of the race. This man murdered after they attacked this farmer. He had felt something was going to happen. He sent his wife, who had polio, and his two daughters to nearby Bulawayo. And this man lying on the ground here, dead. He walked outside his farm one morning and got shot in the leg. He dragged himself in, locked the door, got his rifle and shotgun, and fought for the next 3 hours. He was being attacked by 100 North Korean-trained 5th Brigade, ZANU-PF elite units, the Red Beret characters, full battle gear. They attacked him for 3 hours. He fought them off. He had only about 120 rounds of ammunition. When he ran out of ammunition, he had already killed 18 of them, injured many more. They finally managed to burn out the house, and he was in the bathroom, and he'd run out of ammunition. They finally killed him. The farmers around who tried to come to help were stopped by the police, and Zimbabwe police were blocking them, and the ambulance came to help them because AgriCalerti had called for help, but they weren't allowed to come in until the battle was over, until he'd run out of ammunition, until he'd been killed, and then they saw the hearses, or what do they call it when they come to collect the bodies? Sorry? Yeah, the pathology people and so on, ambulances. And 18 North Korean-trained 5th Brigade been killed by him, and a whole lot of them got injured. And at this point, they stopped open attacks on the Zimbabwe farms. This is back in the year 2001, I think. They realized attacking these farmers head-on is not going to work. Too many of us get killed. So, I mean, if one man could do this, imagine. There were a lot. But okay, on the left you can see how it used to look, and on the right, land reform. So on the right, you've got the example of the improvements made by land reform in Zimbabwe. These are actual documented cases. Sometimes you say, surely not, that can't be the same place. Yes, I'm afraid these are the same places. Burned, destroyed, looted. The entire country is sort of like this vehicle, overloaded. It cannot continue to be sustained. And so a new model ambulance in Zimbabwe. The new Toyota Corolla. You have to get creative to make things work and to transport things in places like Zimbabwe. These women gathered for an all-night prayer meeting ahead of an election, and they got beaten up for having a prayer meeting on the grounds of some public government building. This is freedom in Zimbabwe. The boot on the neck in Samora Machel Avenue in downtown Harare, by police wearing battle gear and helmets, whipping them. That's the hands raised for the whip. And so this is kind of like it. Mugabe stole the farms and didn't know how to operate them afterwards. But it wasn't his fault. It's all the fault of the media, the unpatriotic whites, the gays, America, Britain, expatriates, which all spell Mugabe. It's easy to point the finger, but remember, there's always a few fingers pointing back at you. After destroying his country, interesting how they renamed Rhodesia Zimbabwe after the ruins. Well, after he'd made it ruins, Mbeki said, That's about it. There's been documentation of this chaos. So, stealth confiscation. Your city on socialism is a mess. Your hospital on socialism is a mess. Your grocery store on socialism is kind of empty. Your politician on socialism, well, he does very well. Socialism works for the politicians, not for any other people. This is a fact. It's a fact of history. Those people who say under socialism the people will govern, you've got to be kidding. I was at a public meeting of a communist group And when they said, the people shall govern, I said, well, I'm one of the people. And they said, no, you're not. What do you mean I'm not one of the people? You're not one of the people. How can I not be a person? Well, the people, what do you mean by people? Well, the people are members of the party. If you're not a member of the Communist Party, you're not a people. You mean I'm not a person. Right, you're not a person. So you've got to be a member of the Communist Party to be a person. That's correct. Don't take them at their word. They mean something different by every word. When they say freedom, when they say people, they're not meaning what you and I think. They want to be able to expropriate farms without even compensation. For the farmers who've poured generations of sacrifice and hard work into cultivating the wilderness and turning them into productive farms. It wasn't like this in 1688 when the Huguenots arrived in what was then called Olifantshoek and chased away the elephants and the rhinos and the buffaloes and the leopards, and they started to carve out of the wilderness these beautiful vineyards. In fact, they weren't even given the land by the Dutch, by the VOC. The Dutch East India Company sold this worthless piece of dirt and thorn bush to them, and they had to pay for generations. And even the shovels and picks they took, they had to pay from the VOC at vastly exorbitant prices. And then the VOC extorted from them tax, and the VOC also required them to sell all their produce to them at well below the market price, and they controlled it, had a monopoly. These farmers got nothing free. They had to pay for it with blood, sweat, and tears, and a lot of hard work. If they go ahead with this ill-advised policy, it will not only undermine the food security of South Africa, in other words, we'll have starvation here, but it'll greatly increase unemployment. The farmers are a major employer. It'll chase away investors, employers, entrepreneurs, and tourists. Already people are running away from this country because of a lot of nonsense going on and the crime. The economic consequences and the social catastrophe that would result from such a racist and lawless policy would be incalculable. It would represent the final breaking of faith with a reconciliation settlement made in 1994. Remember, 1991, 92, 93, 94, we were on the brink of civil war. And they made a compromise agreement. From all sides was a compromise. Everyone had to compromise something that we could live together without a war. You know, like Nigerian Civil War comparison, or Sudan Civil War, Ethiopian Eritrean Civil War. To avoid war, we made a compromise, and amongst the things agreed on was private ownership property, rule of law, constitutional guarantees, checks and balances, etc., 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 Bill of Rights, and we could go. That was part of the constitutional arrangement that prevented war. If they were to go back on something as basic as constitutional guarantees for land ownership and property and rights of property, that would be the final break of everything. Violating solemn international agreements and destroying the very Bill of Rights, which was meant to be the foundation for prosperity and progress in this country, will have catastrophic repercussions. You cannot violate private ownership property without destroying the essential foundations for all effective economies. And by the way, if anyone's paid attention to this, it's not talking about taking the farm away from this farmer, let's say he's in Drakenstein in the Franschhoek area, and giving it to someone else. No. They're not talking about changing ownership. They're talking about all property coming under the control of the government and the other people being their tenants. So basically, it would be more like the Soviet model or the Nigerian model under Nyerere, the Tanzanian model under Nyerere, where you get a lease, but the land's owned by the government, and you're their tenant. So if you fall on the wrong side of the party, they can just, you know, take away from you, give it to someone else. No one has private ownership property if the government can take away any property. And so this threatens everyone's property, and they won't stop with farms. Zimbabwe didn't stop at farms. Once they got the farms, they went off the game reserves. After they went off the game reserves, they went off the industries, the factories, the shops. Nothing is safe or sacred if they can violate private ownership property. Yeah, there is the law of unintended consequences. You may have thought that the consequence was this, but the moment you do something, there's always unintended consequences. And when you break solemn agreements and international law and the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, there's massive unintended consequences, which can be a monster that will destroy you. Once again, we're back to the fat cat sitting on the poor electorate, offering them some shriveled up carrot that they know won't work. Prosperity is a delicate balancing act. And this tells you something. It's the EFF think by kicking off the white South Africans, you're somehow going to improve everyone's lot. Well, he's going to fall backwards and from a dizzy height and be stunned. And if he recovers at all, he'll wonder what on earth happened. Somebody did this, showing after destroying the farms, here's South Africa. There's a map outline of Africa with a food bowl, empty food bowl. And doubtless he's probably said, do you have any food? And the answer is, no! But at least the land is mine. But that's not even true. It isn't. It belongs to the state. Dr. Philip du Toit, years ago, over 10 years ago, warned about the great South African land scandal, and there he was just looking at the farms that had been bought by the government, willing buyer, willing seller, which was meant to be handed over for farm reform to black entrepreneurs, which had been absolutely abused, ripped off. You know, like, for example, dairy farm where they cooked and ate all the dairy cattle. And things like this, just one after the other, total destruction. And there's just the wreckage of something that cost the taxpayer hundreds of millions of rand, and it's doing nothing. And now the people who used to be employed there are unemployed and living in a shanty town. It would appear that insane hatred will destroy this great country and the last chance for Africa to show a viable, successful, working economy to the world. These farms were not stolen. These farms were built over generations of long, hard work, seriously hard work. This is not land. This represents the investment of families and generations for a very long time. These things don't happen by accident. You travel around Africa, you can see the difference between a well-productive farm run by Christians and things run in the witchcraft community where they've got muti and all that. And it's not the same. The disgrace that land expropriation without compensation would be to Africa as a whole, and the disillusionment it would create amongst those who have poured their hearts and souls into building Africa up. And this, I include people like Reverend Erlo Stegen and myself, and all the missionaries and all the investors and all the people who've helped. Those of us who poured our heart and soul into Africa for our whole life, this would be catastrophic. South Africa would join the long list of failed African states. And here you can see critical and in danger. We're in danger. So these are failed states, the dark, dark red. And these over here are in danger. We put borderline. Like this was 2012. I think we're now in the critical stage of being a failed state. Yet another warning to outsiders to not even try to invest in a continent that cannot respect private ownership property, nor honour solemn agreements, nor bills of rights and international treaties. If you right now are someone trying to sell land in South Africa, how can you sell farmland when people don't even know if the private ownership property is going to be respected next year? If you are in a service industry, what farmer is going to want to extend, build, develop when he's not sure if he's even going to be there next year? And so everyone's service industry has got a ripple effect. And yes, this is the problem. There's unintended consequences. They didn't plan to cause widespread starvation, but that's what always happens whenever you get politicians meddling in economics. Politicians should stick to what they know something about. Kissing babies and making promises. They know nothing about economics, and they know even less about agriculture. Agriculture is absolutely foundational for society to survive. You destroy the farms, you destroy everything. You know what somebody said in Germany in 1945? You bomb the cities, we can rebuild the cities. But if you destroy the farms, the civilization is finished forever. And you know it's true. The cities were destroyed, but the farms were basically unaffected, and therefore they were able to survive. You destroy the farms, there's nothing in the cities that can survive then. And yes, of course, you're going to get your bleeding heart liberal do-gooders, missionaries and Peace Corps who are going to come and they're going to feed the starving. But that wasn't as good as when the people had their own homes and families and were part of a farm and had a job. So is emotion to replace reason? By the way, did you think these people were enemies? You can't fake body language like that. Are slogans to overwhelm debate? Is expropriation to supersede economics? Are toy toy zombie dances to replace work? Is race hatred to replace good neighborliness? If settlers who came centuries ago and cultivated the wilderness are to be called colonialists and invaders, or should I say their great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren, if they are to be called colonialists and invaders, are black migrants to Europe and America and Australia and South Africa, are we also to call them invaders and colonials? Is an Angolan or a Congolese in South Africa to be called an invader? Vilifying the victims and villains playing the victim card may work for a time, but ultimately it'll come back to destroy the one playing this dangerous game. You know the people who have the story, you know. My mother's sick, I need to go to my grandfather's funeral, I need this, that and the other. They can play those sort of cards for a while, but after a while, any employer is going to stop believing them. You can't do this, you can't play that one too many times. I mean, I've heard people saying, is this your third mother to die? And, you know, things like this. There's all kinds of things where people play the victim card and it doesn't work that often. You might get away with it once, but you're not going to get away with it over and over. The malicious destruction of so many historic places and monuments and graves and churches and homes and even entire forests, such as in the case of, we had 6,000 hectares of forestry reserve around Cape Town burned between 2015 and 2016 by arson. After Zuma called for making the Cape ungovernable at the stadium in Greenpoint. And of course, Meisner Forest last year. This is the path of national suicide. Destruction for the sake of it. Envy, greed, hatred and jealousy does not build up the kind of society any of us would want to live in. Hate evil. Love good. Establish justice in the gate. Let justice roll down like water and righteousness like a mighty stream. This ill-advised policy of expropriating land without compensation is based upon a broad propaganda narrative of righting the wrongs of long ago, taking back what was stolen. In a word, restitution. But who stole the land? Where was it stolen? From whom was it stolen? When was it stolen? And how was it stolen? Do you know that I think it's AfriForum has offered 100,000 rand to anyone who can show one farm in South Africa that was stolen. One farm owned by whites that was stolen from anyone. 100,000 rand, cash. They're still waiting. They've been offering this for quite a while. I have the koi, that's the Bushman, the koi are from people from the Hottentot background, and the San from the Bushman background, saying that the koi and the San were the original inhabitants of East Africa and Southern Africa. We see evidence for the rock painting going all up to what is today Kenya and down. When the Nguni or Bantu tribes started to move south, they exterminated the Khoi and the San everywhere they went. So that the only surviving Khoi and San in all of Africa are in South Africa and Namibia, just a little bit in Botswana. The rest were exterminated. And that's the only reason they survived is because there were white settlers here to protect them from the Nguni tribes. Evidence for this, I had pointed out to me by a Khoi San leader, that in each one of the frontier wars, that's the border wars with the Transkei, with the Khoisa, the Khoi and San always fought as allies of the Dutch and the British settlers against the Khoisa. Always. So this business of Mbeki that the Khoi and the San are our people is rubbish. They were hunted out and exterminated for fun. The fact is the Dutch settlers and the Voortrekkers purchased their land and settled and developed the wilderness at great personal sacrifice. Truth does not fear investigation. Let's investigate the facts. It's one thing to give a slogan. It's another thing, okay, show us an example. Let's go and look at that example. Facts can ruin a good story. I mean, just consider, how did the Zulu get Zululand? Well, facts. Appropriation without compensation, genocide, they massacred and destroyed other tribes, they took over a huge area. The Zulu were one of the smallest nations over 200 years ago under Shaka, and he developed into a massive kingdom by expropriation without compensation. He wiped out, genocided, massacred, and his general, Mzilikazi, killed even more in the Mifikan, Difikan, and of course Dingaan even more. So they wiped out between them. Mzilikazi, Shaka and Dingaan wiped out between 2 to 3 million black people. 156 tribes were exterminated by them during the Mifikan. which is why by the time the Boers went on a great trek, they went through mostly uninhabited what later became the Orange Free State and Transvaal, because they'd been exterminated by the Zulus and the Matabele. I mean, these are facts. But Marxist revolutionaries and agitators use propaganda to whip up hatred for their political ends. However, if we were to consider the real theft taking place in our time, we would recognize no one has stolen more from us than our government has. The greatest theft is from inflation, taxation, and corruption. This is important. I want you to pick this up. The African Union calculates that over 25%, that's 1 in 4, of a gross domestic product, our GDP of Africa, is stolen every year by the governments in Africa. We're not talking about normal theft. We're not talking about syndicates. We're just talking about nationalized theft by government, corruption. That's more than 10 times or 1,000% more than all the foreign aid received by Africa every year is stolen every year by governments. While they promise them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. 2 Peter 2:19. If we could cut corruption down by just 10%, it would equal all the foreign aid poured into Africa every year. Imagine if you could eradicate 50% of corruption. Imagine eradicating over 90% of corruption. Isn't it interesting? We've got a billionaire president whose first act was to increase tax on the poor by increasing GST, shooting it up to 15%, which steals from everyone. America's got a billionaire president who cut taxes. We've got a billionaire president who increased taxes. And by the way, the billionaire president of America doesn't take a salary. Ours does. In Candler's nothing. I drove past this just recently. This is just $250 million. This is a drop in a bucket. This is pocket change. This is nothing compared to the theft going on. Inflation has devalued the rand, the South African rand, to 1/500th what it was back in 1980. Now, that's not my calculation. What do I know about economics? That's from Stephen Mitford Goodson, who was a director of Southern Reserve Bank. A survey on inflation in South Africa, undertaken by the Old Mutual, report that in 1971, you could buy a car for about 1,000 rand. In fact, I remember my father bought a car for about 1,000 rand in 1971. In 1981, the same amount of money, 1,000 rand, could buy a motorbike. In fact, I bought my first motorbike, a Honda 250 XL Scrambler, off-road bike, for just over 1,000 rand, about 1,200 rand, and that was straight out the window, brand new. Took it all the way to Mozambique. In 2001, the same buying power of 1,000 rand had collapsed so that you could only buy a bicycle. And in fact, 2001, I bought a lot of bicycles for evangelists and chaplains in the field in Sudan and the Congo. Now my son informs me that a good pair of running shoes could cost you over 2,000 rand. So from a car to running shoes, that's what's happened to the rand. The Lord abhors dishonest scales, but accurate weights are his delight. The theft of so much hard work and ingenuity by exorbitant taxation and rampant corruption by the ANC government is vastly greater than all other causes of poverty combined. It is calculated by the African Union that over 1 trillion rand a year is lost to corruption in South Africa every year. Okay, let's give you some ideas. This is a while ago, but 50 billion rand would host 10 World Cup soccer events. Sure, that's a lot of money, 10 of them. 215 billion would build 1,000 schools. 216 billion would build 4 million houses. 375 billion would build 10 new hospitals and run them for 18 years. Do you remember President Zuma saying, corruption doesn't hurt anyone? Actually, it hurts everyone. Okay, I've only got this picture in dollars, but that doesn't matter because it'll work in rand too. So imagine we're talking about rand. Okay, so here's 100. Start with the 100 which most people have seen, less have owned. This is 10,000. You could put 10,000 100 notes in your pocket. Okay, that fits in your pocket easily. Now, this is 1 million. Okay, imagine 1 million rand. And that's packed up here, all in 100 rand denominations. You could put that into a little grocery packet, plastic packet, and walk around it. Okay, now this is 100 million, a pallet. We handle pallets in our mission lot. That's a ton, effectively a ton. That fits on a standard pallet. And this is 1 billion. 1 billion! 10 pallets. What about that? So, this is a trillion. There's the person there, see? And notice these are double stacked pallets. There's a pentechnicon. There's $1 trillion or 1 trillion rand and 100 rand notes, as the case may be. This is a football field. This is a 747 jumbo jet. And that is $1 trillion, or in this case, let's say 1 trillion rand in 100 rand notes. Our government steals more than this every single year from us. And they wanting to talk about farms, and they wanting to talk about statues. If you could just get rid of the Anton Rubik statue and so on, you'd solve all the problems. Do you understand how much is being stolen from us by corruption? And now we're not even talking about inflation here. Or taxation. We're just talking about corruption alone. Corruption is killing us. Yes. Governments create wealth the same way ticks create blood. I've been out here at the farm with my young son Calvin, and he must have been crawling around. We got back to Cape Town, and next thing my wife was screaming for me because she had seen a tick on Calvin's back. And being brought up in Austria, she wasn't used to ticks at that stage. So I had to come in, and my daughters were standing, hands by their mouth in shock. As I said, look, this is quite easy. You apply Vaseline. Petroleum jelly, tick can't breathe, got to come out, because no good trying to dig them out, they'll just crawl in deeper. I was brought up with ticks in Rhodesia, that's very normal. So awake, and then you can see this tick pulling his legs out of Calvin's back and coming out of the skin. I picked up the tick once he'd got all his legs out, put him on the couch, he started to run, smacked him, blood spurted all over. More screams from my girls. You only get teaching opportunities like this once in a while. And so I said, this tick is like this ANC government. It produces nothing but corruption and disease. And it lives off the blood of its host. So my young daughter Daniela says, whose blood is that? Calvin's. More screams. I said, polyticks. Poly, many, ticks, blood-sucking parasites. Politics, many, blood-sucking parasites. Do you know, when I went to school, I had a history teacher who was a member of parliament in Rhodesia. Because back then, you didn't get paid for being in parliament. You did that as an honorary service to the country. They got a free train ticket to Salisbury, but if you wanted to fly, he had to buy his own ticket. And that's the way it was in South Africa too. If you were a parliamentarian, you could get a train ticket for free, but the plane ticket was by your own account. That was in the 1970s. You didn't used to be paid to be a member of parliament or a town council or a mayor. It was something you did, someone who had a real job, who was donating his time. Today, it is a way of getting rich and then stealing from everyone else. They have turned politics into one big corruption industry. When I was growing up, I mean, you ask the average kid, what do you want to be when you grow up? Farmer, 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 game ranger, farmer, soldier, farmer. And I mean, that's the way it was in Rhodesia. I was one of those who said game ranger. And, you know, I think we had one weirdo who came up with doctor. And we, no one was saying lawyer, astronaut. And these days, which I would have been saying in America, these days, what do you get? Politician, sportsman, actor, politician, sportsman, actor, because that's where the money is now. I mean, nobody wants a real job doing something where they provide a service or feeding somebody or goods or services. Now they just want to get rich quick, which is why they're thinking about being an actor, sportsman, or a politician. Micah 6, 11 to 12. Shall I count pure those with wicked scales and with a bag of deceitful weights? For her rich men are full of violence. Her inhabitants have spoken lies, and their tongue is deceitful in their mouth. Skimping the measure, boosting the price, cheating with dishonest scales, I will never forgive, says the Lord. How long are we going to accept the smoke screens, the scapegoats, the distractions, the disinformation of the criminals who run this country? The middle head of cancer is ANC. And by the way, yes, that's Winnie Mandela, that's Julius Malema, and that is Cyril Ramaphosa. You thought they were enemies? You can't fake body language like that. Let me tell you, the EFF and ANC are working together. I've got proof on that. Power cuts by Eskom between 2008 and 2015 cost the Southern economy over 300 billion rand. Putting black economic empowerment, affirmative action characters into a job that they had no motivation to do, just getting the profits and so on, it cost the economy 300 billion. The additional diesel cost of Eskom to run their power stations due to human error at Kubik nuclear power station in 2015, which caused the first power breakdown in Cape Town ever, was estimated to be over 250 million per week. That's just the diesel costs, 215 million rand a week. And they say, oh, you know, we don't have the money needed for compensation for farm song. Stage 3 load shedding was estimated to cost the South African economy 80 billion rand a month. The severe water restrictions in Cape Town has led to a drastic decrease of international tourists visiting our city. Last year, tourism accounted for 9% of South Africa's total economy. $35 billion, that's US dollars, we get from tourists. Most of which comes to the Cape, or came. But now, BBC, RT, CNN are putting on the news, Capetonians queuing for water, swimming pools empty. 87% of small businesses in Cape Town have reported losing half their revenue due to the water restrictions. You know, if you're a garden service, many garden service people have gone out of business because people don't want garden service anymore. They don't even have gardens anymore. And car wash, what chance do they have to operate? And you could just carry on. Water Resource Partners estimates 30% of South Africa's water in urban areas is wasted through leakages. Soweto residents have reported that major water delivery pipes, big thick pipes, not the ones we have been leaking for years without the municipality repairing them. So how our city works against us, the city of Cape Town rolled out water management devices. You might not have seen it, but unfortunately we've got one of them. They charge us 4,500 rand to install it, and then they charge you rent for having it. We didn't ask for it, and it automatically cuts off your water when you've used your 50 litres per person per day allotment. And they're punishing 8,000 households a month with this, and so on. Yet, what was the newspaper headlines from yesterday? City rakes in R1 billion more than it planned. The city's water's underspending, 1.6 billion. In other words, they're taking more money in for our water, more than R1.6 billion more than they need to. They need to do it, they said, because of the water restrictions. In fact, it's a racket. You've probably noticed, we're not exactly in a drought. We haven't been in a drought for a long time. But boy, do they love the drought restrictions that they've got. This isn't the worst drought in South Africa's history. This is the worst water mismanagement in Cape Town's history. We had less rain within the last 10 years. 8 years ago, we had less rain. In the year, the actual average rainfall was less 8 years ago. When they said the worst drought in 127 years, it's sucked it out of their thumbs. The actual statistics are not even the worst in the last 10 years. And, of course, burning trains don't exactly help either. The war on whites in South Africa is also seen in economics through black economic empowerment, affirmative action, job reservation, racial quotas, even for sports teams, all of which are designed to keep whites, and particularly white males, out of government, out of commercial employment, which isn't very intelligent because it's undermining the economy for everyone. The violence, vicious, brutal, sadistic murders and tortures of farmers and their family members defy description. Farm attacks in South Africa are 700% greater than any other country in the world. AfriForum's documented multiple cases of incitement to genocide and other menacing threats against whites on social media, including ANC councillor, kill the Boer, kill the farmer, or Valafi Kumalo of the Gauteng Arts and Culture Department, I want to cleanse this country of all white people. White people in South Africa deserve to be hacked and killed. You must be bushed alive, whatever that means, and skinned and your offspring used as garden fertilizer. Is this hate speech? Is that hate speech? I hate white people, and so on and so forth. Just get me a bazooka and AK-47 so I can do the right thing and kill these demon-possessed humans. Sounds like he might have a problem. And then high courts have called this hate speech, but they don't seem to get prosecuted. And it carries on. Time is up, and so on and so forth. Julius Malema, all sorts of stuff. and it just carries on and on. We must kill all whites and so on and so forth. And yet most people are actually against affirmative action being practiced in this country. And this, I use my guns to rob and kill Indians and whites. Please, fellas, join me. We have to rape the kids of AIDS virus too. Is this hate speech? What do you like about this? I'm the Messiah of our time. I will give free land to my people. Unlike Jesus or Nelson Mandela and his friends, I don't need to go to a stupid prison to save my people, says Malema. Kill the Boer, kill the racist, kill Afrikaans. Can anyone see the logical inconsistency and oxymoron here? This isn't funny. Tires and petrol were used to burn alive over 1,000 people. Every time I hear the name Jesus, I'm reminded of white people. I'm glad he won't come back, because if he comes back, we will kill him and cremate his body, says Black Land First leader Andile Mantshama. Well, the Bible says on the day when the Lord returns, people like this will call for the mountains to cover them. They prefer to be buried under an avalanche and face the wrath of the Lamb on the day of judgment. But don't expect the police to be prosecuting hate speech and inciting to genocide anytime soon. Farmers are being murdered at a rate over 4 times more than even the police, which is already outrageous. The murder rate of police is out of control too. White South African farmers are experiencing the highest rates of violent crime anywhere in the world. It's the most dangerous job in the world today. AfroForum has noted that the term farm murder is misleading, and the term farm terror and farm torture is more suitable. Farmers in South Africa are being murdered at a rate of 220 per 100,000 per year. Average murder rate per 100,000 of the population worldwide is 9 per 100,000. We have 220 per 100,000. Any form of justice in this country is rare. The criminal justice system is spectacularly failing to effectively prosecute most of the perpetrators of these attacks. This picture from a CCTV camera shows before a farm attack, a military-grade scanner that jams cell phones. So the farmer's undertaking calls for help using a cell phone, it jams signal. This is very sophisticated, not available to the average criminal. Farming family victims are often tied up, cut with machetes, pitchforks, burned with boiling water, hot irons, dragged behind vehicles, raped and mutilated in incomprehensible savagery. And when this was brought up in Parliament by Peter Groenewald, there were people in Parliament laughing. The South African Agricultural Union recorded 10,000 farm attacks and over 1,500 murders between 1994 and 2008. The Transvaal Agricultural Union recorded 2,000 attacks and over 1,200 murders between 1991 and 2009. The South African Chamber of Commerce and Industry calculates that every farm murder or attack costs the South African economy another 2 million rand annually. And by the way, I saw a report just yesterday from Zimbabwe that the Zimbabwe farm reform, land reform, has cost Zimbabwe $17 billion, US dollars, $17 billion, roughly a billion a year since they started in 2000 in lost revenue. $17 billion. And of course, there's more cost than just that. Then you get Chris Van Zyl and Dirk Herman put together Lands of Sorrow, 20 years of farm attacks in South Africa. They've put details, names, places, and absolutely hideous. When Freedom Front member Parliament Peter Groenewald reported the horrific tortures being inflicted on white farmers in South Africa today, an ANC member of Parliament in Parliament shouted and jeered, "Bury them alive." And he was not disciplined for this breach of parliamentary protocol. Destruction is in its midst. Oppression, deceit do not depart from its streets. We read now Psalm 55 verse 11. Do not remove an ancient landmark which your fathers have set. Proverbs 22 verse 28. Here follows a compilation of quotes and policies from ANC leaders. All white people are criminals and should be treated as such. We need to take their property, deny them job opportunities, and treat them as second-class citizens. White people are rapists, dogs, and cowards. Says who? We need to sing songs about how they should be mowed down and murdered. White people are the minority, and that means they must have fewer rights than the rest of us. White people are the minority, and that means they must have fewer rights than the rest of us? Absolutely, that is how democracy works, he says. And if they dare to protest against these views, we must tell them to keep their mouths shut because they are racist, they're simply getting what they deserve. Now, a person who calls all whites racist, is he not being a racist just by that very statement? Farm attacks. Oldest victim on a farm this year, 87. Average number of attackers, 3. Most attackers, 11. This is where the farm attacks have been, mostly in the north, of course. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who justify the wicked for a bribe and take away justice from a righteous man. So, what can we do? We need to do something. This is first and foremost an information war. We need to be informed. My people are destroyed from lack of knowledge. That's the first part. There's resources to set the record straight, and I've brought some which we'll put out and make available, like sketches from South African history, biblical principles of Africa. There's videos we can show, Agenda 2, Masters of Deceit and Bitter Harvest as a drama, documentaries, Agenda 2 to understand what's behind this. There's websites we can visit, like Henry Morton Stanley's School of Christian Journalism. Do not be afraid of sudden terror, God says, nor the trouble from the wicked when it comes, for the Lord will be your confidence and will keep your foot from being caught. We need to fear God, not man. We need to be interceding. We need to be involved in practical action. We need to invest in workable solutions. We need to implement workable strategies for security and survival. A prudent man foresees evil, we read in Proverbs 27:12. We need to be prepared. We need to pray, publish, prepare, protest. We need to stand up, speak out, and step out. We need to be armed and alert. We need to stock up on supplies and have backup plans. There's going to be more riots, disruptions. There will be times of shortages and unavailability. We need to secure our homes and our farms, our church and our mission. We need to prepare for lawlessness, power failures, water mains being cut. We need to know our neighbors and help one another as there's strength and unity. Watch, stand fast in the faith. Be brave, be strong, we read in the Bible. We need to speak up on community radio stations, on phone-in programs. We need to write letters to the editor and articles for local community newspapers. Maybe we can contribute to or set up a web or a blog or social media that will deal with the issues in our area. Organize public meetings and film screenings on films like Agenda 2 and The Bitter Harvest. Obtain Security and Survival Handbook and implement its practical solutions. We need to rescue, redeem, restore, reform, and revive. Help build community support structures. Support civil defense, neighborhood watch organizations. Get networked with people who can do something. Work for decentralization. Many of us are committed to working for independence, for the Cape. There's groups like the Swedlanders who help train farmers for self-defense. We should find groups in our neighborhood that we can network with for information and mutual support. Do not be afraid of them, we read in Nehemiah 4:14. Remember the Lord, great and awesome, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses. These are just some of the practical materials that we have that we'll make available. And just a friendly reminder to our dear friends on the other side in the EFF. We have our own war veterans, 600,000 of them, who actually did fight a war and who won. And it helped determine the end of the Cold War. The Russians have a book out called Angola, The Beginning of the End of the Soviet Union. Be without fear in the face of your enemies. Be brave and upright that God may love thee. Speak the truth always, even if it leads to your death. Safeguard the helpless and do no wrong. This is your oath. This is a quote from Knights in the Middle Ages. Psalm 94, verse 16. Who will rise up for me against the wicked, and who will make a stand for me against the workers of iniquity? I've got a newsletter which has got every word I've just put in here, Farms and Freedom Under Fire. So you'll have the text that you can take and look at or share with others, or take out of it a phrase or quote or a verse that you might want to use in your letters or protest. And also, one of our researchers, Emma, did 9 stages of genocide in South Africa, and also speaking about the farm attacks and those who fight back. And that's in our latest Christian Action magazine. They're on our websites too.